Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Wow, it is episode 72 of The Stare Down. That's the Sports Talk and Real Estate Show. Greetings, friends. I'm Sean Carpenter coming to you from Kalispell, Montana. Those of you that are just listening can only imagine the vistas behind me. But my good friends Bill in St. Pete and Todd in Atlanta, Georgia are seeing the big sky country behind me.
Not only the big sky, I don't mean to interrupt, but I have to tell you this. As you're talking, there are falcons. Falcons flying behind you. It's awesome.
It's amazing, right? So
continue.
Bill, how are you, buddy? Good to talk to you. Good to see you.
Good, doing good. I'm on vacation this week, so I'm excited about that. Cindy and I are headed off to New York City for 3 days at the U.S. Open. So we'll be there for the second and third round matches, and I can't tell you how excited Cindy is. She's over the moon about this, and we're going to have a blast. I've never explored Long Island. I don't know if you have, either one of you, but we're staying on Long Island, and we are going east. We're out to Montauk, to Hamptons, Shelter Island. So we're going to have some fun out there.
So, Bill, you know you're going to have to stop by, at least stop by and visit Bethpage Black, right?
Bethpage Park
is not that far away.
I've played there. So we are staying about 3 miles from Bethpage and about 5 miles from where the Northern Trust is being played as we speak.
Very cool.
And then we'll drive right by Shinnecock Hills on our trip out to the Hamptons. So I've already explored their website. You can't set foot in their clubhouse without being accompanied by a member. So
in Shinnecock,
we won't be stopping by.
pretty private out there. Let's just say that. Yeah. Todd, how are you this week, buddy?
Hey, Sean. I'm doing great. Had a really laid back weekend. This past week, I had the pleasure of going to our rival school in college, Athens, Georgia, and just a really neat little town. I'm sure you've been there before, Sean. I don't know if you have or not. I assume you have, but stopped at a great brewery, Creature Comforts, afterwards, entertained some clients. Just had a really good week. Also, I wanted to lead, but I got ahead of myself. Episode 72, this is one of my favorite live albums, Grateful Dead Europe 72.
Wow.
That was my foray back in college to really start listening to them. So anyway, that's what's going on in my head.
Some of my favorites, Ramble on Rose, He's Gone.
Tennessee Jed.
Just some really, really good Grateful Dead songs on that album. And a double set, double albums, right? Back in college, that was the double album or the double CD where they opened up the CD case and it had CDs on both sides of the middle.
Yep. We thought it was so old. We were, what was it, 88, 89, and we're listening to Europe 72. God, this was ancient, right?
Bill's just shaking his head saying, what's up with these guys?
My favorite album from 1972 live would be Barbra Streisand live at the Forum. Her fundraiser for the... Yeah, I'm not a deadhead. So sorry.
That's all right, man. It's an acquired taste, but once you have it, it's kind of like beer, right?
So that's right.
And Todd, what's your drink of choice today? I see you drinking.
I am Old Reliable. I'm going with the Sweetwater hash, but they have rebranded it, Sean. I don't know if you know. Now it's Hop Hash Easy IPA.
Instead of
Hash Session IPA. I don't know if they're.
I think that's so they can not call it a session, and that way they can kind of sell it year round. Because I think it's sold so well and it's done so well around the country. Sessions were only supposed to be kind of, you know, little quarterly makes. And I think it's just been so popular and such a drinkable beer.
I agree to disagree with you respectfully, Sean. Session beers are beers that are under 5% alcohol. So,
okay. All right.
A beer that is sessionable. It's supposed to compete with the Bud Light, Miller Lights, but have the IPA kind of flavor and taste to it.
Okay.
So anytime you're drinking a session, it's, you know, all day IPA, hence the name, all day IPA is a session beer. So I don't know. And again, I don't know if there's a stigma to session beers and they like, or they're just rebranding it, but excellent beer. You've had a couple of them. It's my go-to these days.
Yeah. Well, I know Bill's drinking out of Atlanta, Georgia, a Diet Coke, right, which is also a Diet Coke.
Yeah. It's got a nice kind of a kick to it. I think it's,
and I'm going with a little beer out of a Phillipsburg Brewing Company, Montana called Otter Water Session Pale Ale. So that's going to kind of fuel our conversation today. Guys, why don't we start with a big fight last night? I don't know. Did either of you guys pay-per-view it? I have not watched a fight since this will put serious dates on the last time I watched
Tyson, Buster Douglas
Tyson Buster Douglas at a fraternity house at NC State, Raleigh, North Carolina. It was me and Tim Logan, and we watched that epic kind of
upset,
epic upsets of all times, right? And last night, McGregor took it to the 10th, which I think was probably longer than a lot of the boxing fans thought it would go. Did either of you guys happen to watch it?
Sure. Go ahead, Bill.
Just saw highlights, right? I think most of us, I was on Twitter.
You didn't pay-per-view it.
Did not pay-per-view it, no. How about you? Did you, Todd?
I did not pay-per-view it. I'm getting older. I had offers to go to house parties, and the thought of staying up till about 11:45 at best watching the fight didn't bring me in. So I stayed at home. I was in bed early. You mentioned Tim Logan. This is on Twitter. He is at 5220, Bill, which is an homage to Florida Gators national championship drubbing over the Florida State Seminoles. So I just awesome. I just thought of that, Sean, when you mentioned Tim. But no, I thought the fix was in. I didn't see any of the fight, but I thought there's just a great money-making opportunity for both these boys. Maybe I'm a little cynical, but apparently McGregor boxed really well. His strategy was to come out hard, and Mayweather kind of knew that, and I think he punched himself out. And from what I understand, by the end, it was Mayweather's just kind of toying with him a little bit.
Yeah, and by the way, they didn't take the ring until after midnight. The pay-per-view thing got delayed. It was late. So
yeah. I made a good call.
I'm trying to stay up watching these periscopes, and I finally just said, screw it. I'm sure I'll wake up in the middle of the night somewhere and I'll come check it out. And there were lots of good highlights, you know, that people had posted on Periscope and things on Twitter. So you got to see the final 30 seconds of the fight. And it was apparent at that point that McGregor was not going to be on his feet much longer if they hadn't stopped the fight, because he was defenseless.
Now it poses a question, Sean. Sorry to jump in, but how long do you think Mayweather would last in a MMA ring, right?
Not even a minute.
Yeah, so yeah. You got to give respect to McGregor for doing what he did.
And, you know, they really talked about the fact that I believe it was McGregor had a lot of fines being already presented ahead of him if he would have done any type of kicks or body blows or anything like that was maybe MMA fighting. I've never seen an MMA match. I've never watched a full, you know, start to finish, bring him in the ring, octagon, whatever you call it. I've never seen one. But, you know, there was also the fact that Mayweather couldn't put McGregor, or McGregor didn't have to worry about being kind of held against the fence or taken down, or, you know, because they talked about McGregor, most of his fighting in MMA, he has to worry about the body blows, the leg kicks, the sweeps, the blows to the side of the head from a foot. And so it really allowed him to focus. And it sounds like he you know, he made $100 million for himself by surviving, right?
Yeah.
Could have made more if he won, but I see that Mayweather tried to bet on himself and they stopped the bet. I'm not sure how that happened. Did he actually walk in? Is he that egotistical that he walked into the casino with a bag of money?
I'm not sure. That's awesome. I want to know this though. What if Mayweather had one of his good buddies go put a ton of money on TKO in the 10th?
Yeah,
that's something he could control. He could kind of string him along and then just pummel him into submission, basically, pun intended, in whatever round he wanted to. And that he decided to do it in the 10th. He definitely didn't want to go in 12, and that was good.
Hey, a couple things, Sean and Bill. Did you see the weigh-in?
I did not know.
God, it's I'm admittedly very sophomoric, right? As a general rule, things that make me laugh shouldn't anymore. But McGregor's wearing, and it's video, there's pictures. He's wearing tighty whities and they're jawing. And it looked like this guy's so crazy that he was in a semi-state of arousal, like so fired up. It's just amazing. That guy is beautifully insane for the world of boxing and MMA, right? He's just out there. Two things real quick. One is those guys made more after the fight than most people make all year. I mean, they were getting like $50,000 appearance fees in Vegas just to show up for 20 minutes.
At parties.
Yeah, just amazing. And another thing I needed to research on, hopefully you guys have read the article, but Mayweather bet on himself early on and actually bought out of his contract for $750,000. He had a chance to make $8 million in a fight. And I guess he had the vision, the dream, the intention of I can make so much more than that. And they said he's made hundreds of millions, maybe even billions of dollars because he gambled on himself and bought out of a guaranteed $8 million payday, and he bought out for $750,000. So I thought that's pretty interesting.
I did see that he finishes his career 50-0. Mm-hmm. He says he's done. He said he was done last time over Pacquiao. You think there's two more? And tell me why. Yeah. You think there's two more.
I think there's going to be a rematch with him and McGregor and just make a ton of more money. So I just that's my cynical gut. I mean, there's money to be made, right?
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people were saying the reason that that Mayweather came back for this fight was another $20 million popped up that he owed the IRS, so he needed to fix that. And so, you know, he's going to gross 300, turn that into 150, give 20 to the IRS. He's going to walk away with 125 million. He should be fine because he had a lot of money before that. Right.
He's, the way he spends money, though, he needs to keep fighting. He bought a $2 million car pre-fight as a just kind of a gift to himself, like because he knew he was going to make $300 million. I mean, anyone who spends $2 million on a car is going to blow through that money. I hope not.
Takes, Todd, remind me of the takes this week. How much did Mayweather make?
Three. I want to say 300, and I want to say McGregor made 100.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So just think, those three guys and Mavis up in Massachusetts, each made $300 million this week. The lady that won the Powerball. And she didn't get punched in the face. She didn't get punched in the face to do it. But
I'll tell you what, it'd be interesting to know which one burns through the money first. Because
I agree.
I think Mavis has a chance. I'm just saying.
I agree. She quit her job. And, you know, my mom and I were talking this week. Imagine all the relatives that are just going to come out of the woodwork.
Friends, relatives, podcast hosts. I mean, it's going to be.
I just need $3 million. I just brutal. Need $2 million. Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have this, but I have a pact with three other guys that if any of us ever hit, you know, over $1 million on anything, no matter what it is, that we're not asking each other for money, but there's going to be an around the world golf trip that's totally funded for the spouse as well by the winner, and that's just going to take whatever it is a month or two to have this incredible experience.
Right.
That's one thing we've promised. Everybody else.
Ireland, Scotland.
You got
Hawaii, yep. Japan, awesome. Australia.
Dubai. Why not?
Dubai. Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. Yeah, very cool. So. All right. So let's get out of boxing. Let's go to a sport we don't hit on once a year. It looks like, as expected, Japan will win the Little League World Series. It's probably once every 4 or 5 years that a United States team wins. Good comeback by Lufkin, Texas yesterday. Comes back from 5-0 down to rally in the bottom of the or top of the sixth and score two. And if you were watching, it was kind of cool. The old manager comes out and says, they're down 5-4. They've been whittling back their 5-0 hole. They have their last at bats. And he says, all right, guys, we got to get two. He doesn't say we're going to tie this game up. He says, we're going to get two here and then hold them. We've worked too hard to get to where we're at. And then sure enough, the first two batters, the first batter walks and the second kid jacks a home run. Lufkin, I believe, is losing right now. You guys can probably see it live. Losing 7-2 to Japan, just a dominant team. Japan's only given up now three runs in the entire Little League World Series. Did you happen to see any of the Little League World Series? We talked about it a little bit last week. Did you guys watch anything at all this week, Bill?
No.
No? Okay.
Todd?
I think you know the answer, no, but I did see a great story, which would maybe make me want to watch the Little League World Series more. Again, a little too much fame and commercialization for these kids. I hope they enjoy it. But did you see the two Asian teams were playing and the one kid got jacked and the pitcher was crying and the team was celebrating and the kid who hit the home run ran over and, you know, talked to him, consoled him. I thought that was how do you hit a game-winning home run and not celebrate with your teammates? And he ran over, and I don't know if you knew him from, you know, way back when or just as a kind soul, but I thought that was a pretty cool take.
Nice to see that.
Let's quickly turn to the Northern Trust, Bill. As you said, kind of up the island from the where you're heading in a couple days. Mm-hmm. It looks like we have, let's see, six holes to play.
Well, you might be a little behind. They're actually on 16 tee, tied at 13 under. Jordan,
three holes to play.
Yep. And DJ.
Spieth and DJ. And how many strokes back is Rahm?
Four.
Yeah, he's too far out.
He's minus nine. Yep.
So I think as far as the first round of the playoffs, that's what PJ is hoping for, is two of the best in the world battling down the it'd be interesting to sort of take a pulse of the golf nation right now and how many people are pulling for Jordan, the golden boy, and how many people are pulling for the, you know, the beer drinking, coke using DJ
former
and the
adulterer
Pauline Gretzky's maybe Instagram lights up tonight.
Allegedly. We keep saying allegedly, so I don't get in trouble.
Sean, I did see one thing. As DJ just teed off, I think he likes his tee on 16. But they said Jordan Spieth, since 2015 Masters, when he's held the lead after 54 holes, he has closed out 90% of the time if he's held or tied the lead. And the PGA average is 29%. So that stat's just unbelievable. Wow. So
what's Tiger's average career?
I don't know.
I think it happened twice to Tiger out of 80.
Is that right? Yeah.
50 leads after 50.
Yeah. Why Yang was one of
them. Yang and probably Mediate, because Mediate came back and caught him.
Terry
Pines.
Yeah.
And he went on to win that one, but as far maybe the closeout is closeout to win. Right. Interesting. Well, baseball. Well, have you guys been impressed? You know, what's kind of been silently kind of creeping up is the fact that Giancarlo Stanton is approaching 50 home runs, and Aaron Judge has pretty much just hit a mud patch. Bill, let me ask you about the brawl, or should I say brawls with an S?
Yeah.
That we saw in the New York Detroit game. Let's talk about this a little bit, because you're kind of our old school baseball fan.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this unwritten rule of you hit me, I hit you, and after that we're good. But if you go any beyond that, we're going to drop gloves, we're going to throw bats, we're going to brawl. Talk to us a little bit about that, what happened in that game. Because there was, I think, six batters hit, five batters hit.
Yeah, and so a couple after.
There was fights outside of the pitcher. It wasn't really just the pitcher batter. In the big one, it was Miguel Cabrera and, was it Romine?
Romine, the catcher.
Catcher. Who I guess in that case, does Cabrera think that the pitch was called by Romine, or was it just?
So this is a unique situation. I've never seen this before. You know, how many times you say this in sports, I've never seen that. And my wife would go, really? You're 56 years old. You've never seen that? I go, no, I never have. That's why it's so fun.
Right.
But Romine, the pitcher was ejected for throwing behind Miggy. I can't remember who threw behind him, but they're bringing in Chapman, right, to come in and pitch. And somehow, you know, while he's kind of coming in off, you know, to come in and he's talking, getting ready to start his warm-up pitches, but Cabrera says something to Romine. And Romine says, I'm not talking to you. Or he kind of gives him that some kind of like, what do you get out of my face kind of thing. And that's where you see Cabrera violently shove him. And then they start. So it was seriously, he was just saying, what's next? Are you going to have Chapman throw at me? You know, because the other pitcher got ejected for throwing behind him. And
when the pitch went behind Cabrera, the umpire immediately threw the guy out.
He was out. He wanted.
And Cabrera didn't make any effort to Miggy didn't make any effort to go to first base. He was sort of just standing there.
Well, he wasn't hit. He was just, you know, he's still at bat.
He was thrown at, but it was, it was.
He was like okay with it, but then for whatever reason, he and Romine just didn't hit it off. And then you got, you know, it's part of that, the old school baseball brawl, right, where both bullpens empty. You know, generally the bullpen's empty and they each look for somebody in another team to hug so they don't have to get involved. And then the bench is empty and there's always a couple hotheads. And we know now the Yankees, Gary Sanchez is one of the hotheads.
Right, big time.
He was down low on the ground punching guys, you know, punching Cabrera, you know, underneath the pile. And so those kinds of guys, they definitely rise to the surface or sink to the bottom, whatever you want to say it.
Right.
And they got pretty severe fines. Sanchez was handed down with a pretty good suspension. But then you go deeper in that game. Betances ends up hitting a Tiger in the head.
Right.
And nothing. I don't think he was ejected. I know he wasn't fined. It was the weirdest thing. And there's no way that better not be a retaliation play, because of those unwritten rules, one is you don't hit guys in the head.
Yeah. That's why so many times
drill them in the midsection and just move
their bottom leg.
Yeah,
it's behind them, just to sort of say that was meant to hit you, but I just didn't want to hit you because I'm kind of a
So that was obviously, you know, short tempers are brewing, and the worst part about this now is they're long memories. They know they can't really do something today because the umpires are all over it. But watch next year when the Yankees and Tigers get together for the first time.
Yeah,
there might be somebody getting plunked early on, and we'll see what happens. But you know, I don't know how long it takes to get that to go away, because there's still some managers, you know, that are in their 60s and, you know, that kind of age range who are still big proponents of that. Like, I don't think Joe Maddon's that kind of a guy as a manager. And maybe it just takes a little time for that to slowly weed its way out. And maybe guys like Bryce Harper coming in who are having fun will help change that dynamic a little bit about trying to, you know, play by the old rules, the old unwritten rules. We'll see.
Well, we are seeing it in hockey a little bit. We're probably seeing less fights per game.
Yeah.
Just the culture's changing a little bit, but it's interesting. So right now, as we usually recap, Boston last week had a 5-game lead over the Yankees. Now they're just 2.5. They've lost 4. Yankees have won 2. Your Tampa Bay is kind of slipping. They're heading the other direction. 4-6 in the last 10, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, they're struggling. They had a big game Friday night, but then they lost a heartbreaker last night. And I think they're up 2-1 today. They need some help to make it to the wild card.
Tribe up 6.5 over Minnesota. Houston maintaining their 12.5 game lead. Although the Los Angeles Angels are kind of right within striking distance of that wild card. So that wild card is going to get interesting in the next 3 weeks. Right. Over the National League, Washington and the Dodgers, not even close. And then the Cubs, just a 2.5 game lead over the Brewers. Remember, the Cardinals were just a game back a week ago. And the Cubs are 6-4 in the last couple, and the Cardinals are 4-6. So the Central is going to keep things interesting, and the AL East is, I think, going to keep things interesting. And then obviously the wild card.
Yeah, I think the wild card in the American League is going to be that's going to keep everybody going in baseball the last 2 weeks. I think the NL, I still like the Rockies and the D-backs to kind of hang on there and keep
pretty
substantial leads. But boy, it's anybody's game. There'll be 6-7 teams. They'll have a shot with 2 weeks to go for the American League wild card. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure.
We might have play-in games to get to the play-in to get to the wild card, which will be any type of a one game winner take all is always a ton of fun, right?
And Todd, your boys are the Braves are only 14 back of 500. They're 28 back of the league, but 14 back of 500. So,
the good old days. We had a good run for years and years and years and years. It's just
I remember the 90s too, Todd. But we got to give up your
got to move on. It's
hard. Got to give up your years in Florida. You got to give up the Braves. It's almost
sigh.
And Bill, just perspective. You talk about like how the mighty have fallen. Have you seen or be honest and just guess how many games back are the Giants right now?
Oh, no.
40.
No. Oh, wait a minute. Cause the Dodgers are 56. 56.
They used to be in the 30s. So I'm assuming
56 over and 56. And oh my gosh. It is. It's like in the mid 40s.
They're 40.5 games back.
I was closest without extra going over.
So. Yes, Todd, you would have won the
showdown.
Yes, exactly.
And nobody's talking about Bochy being in jeopardy in the hot seat. No, because he's a great man. Yeah,
he's actually 27 games under 500.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, I haven't watched the Rays too often. Were they special uniforms last night, or is that how they roll?
No, they've got these softball style throwback unis.
It was fantastic.
But they're made up because the Rays were the Devil Rays, and their colors were kind of purple and green and teal. Remember that old color when they first came out? Awful. And so they've created in their mind like what the Rays would look like in the 70s. I went to the 70s night, and those are the unis you see. This is what the 1970s Tampa Bay Rays, even though they only started in 1990, whatever.
Yeah.
That 97, I think that's their cool new look. And so they're wearing them with that Players Weekend. I love seeing the nicknames on the back of the players that'll do it. Yeah. So I think my favorite one was Tommy Two Towels Hunter. And the two towels is why you think it is, because he thought the towels were kind of small coming out of the shower for, you know, what he was carrying. So we needed two towels. So now the whole team calls him Two Towels. So
that's sweet.
Awesome.
While we're guessing numbers, Bill, how many games over 500 are the Dodgers?
57?
Close.
I know it's
54.
Okay, yeah, that's
54 games over 500.
It's crazy. Yeah.
They've only lost 37 games.
Wow. Yeah. So they got to get to 117 wins to set the record, I think. And
113.
Only, you sure? One? I thought
they were. Yeah, you're right. 116, I think, is Mariners. Yeah.
Mariners won 116. So
The Yankees are the most wins of a team that won the World Series.
Yeah, that was the year they beat the Padres. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay.
No problem. Hey, how are the Chargers doing?
Who?
The Chargers, exactly.
Who? Are you talking about the McClintock Chargers in Phoenix, the high school team? I think they won their first game last night or Saturday, Friday night. So you're talking about them, right? The McClintock Chargers in Phoenix?
Todd, it's time for you to talk about the EPL, man. We are getting hot and heavy, man.
Well, you, Real quick, you mentioned Chargers. Are we circling back to NFL?
Let's talk about that before we get to your
starting quarterback was announced in Cleveland, Sean. Why don't you talk about that?
How about Deshaun Kizer? Yes. Deshaun Kizer, Notre Dame grad. Hugh Jackson just says he just feels right. He feels like he's the right guy for the call. I'm not a Browns fan by any means, but I will watch them because they'll be on pretty much every other week. The local affiliates do their best to try and play both of them so that they don't get a lot of calls from the fans in Columbus, which sits not exactly in the middle, but between Columbus and Cincinnati. So interesting. I don't know how many other how many other rookie starters there'll be. Prescott was good last year as a rookie, right? But Dak Prescott's offensive line might be a little bit better than the Cleveland offensive line.
Yeah.
I think what makes it interesting is who's going to be holding the clipboard behind him.
Yeah, right.
Is it Osweiler?
Yes.
Wow. Making a lot of money, right?
Making $12 million, something like that.
Wow.
I mean, it's a ballsy call, for lack of better adjective.
But Browns. Who cares? It's the Browns. You got to lose.
You got to respect your coach, Hugh Jackson, right, Sean? Is that correct?
Yeah. But let me ask you this, guys. You're both competitive guys. There's a fine line between Osweiler saying, like, look, if they want to pay me $12 million to stand here and not get injured, not even sweat, I'm okay with that. And then there's another part of him that has to say, this sucks. This sucks. I'd rather go to Canada and make $4 million and play, right? I mean, like, there's got to be that tipping point, right, Bill?
No offense to my friends in Canada, but I don't think that going to Canada is this.
Cleveland's kind of the same, right? Isn't it?
Just across a big lake from Canada, right? I think you're right. There is a fine line. It's not. I think you've taken it down a little too far.
Maybe. But
Would he rather be making $8 million and starting someplace? Possibly. But you're also in the NFL as the backup. You're like one play away from being
sure
again. And sure. And Kizer can go out and just have a horrible first two or three games, and he's back in there. I think there's something to be said for being a stand-up guy, realizing you lost the battle, still supporting the team. There probably are a few people in the sports. I'm going to tell you right now, I just think Jay Cutler is a guy who could give a rat's ass if he was starting or not. He'd rather just make the money and sit on the bench. And it might just be because I hate Jay Cutler.
Right.
We'll see what happens with him in Miami. That'll be fun. Speaking of Florida teams, Jacksonville, they named their starter today.
They did.
Blake Bortles. So stop that train. It's going to be awesome. Yeah, not. Okay. Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm all about the Bucs this year, right? I think we have a great opportunity. Listen to me. I think the Bucs have a great opportunity this year with all the talent they've added, with the position players, with Jameis Winston in that magical third year. This is going to be fun. So
it could be a lot of fun. Now, they did lose in a preseason game to the Browns. But once again, preseason, I'm not sure what that means, right?
Yeah.
It's so hard to gauge. I mean, Brady comes in and looks electric in his one quarter of play against Detroit, and then they barely hang on to beat Detroit. The Giants beat the Jets 32-31. It's such a weird – that preseason is such a weird animal. I think it's truly comes down to the last quarter of the game to decide which guy executes better in a game situation to decide whether they make the practice squad, right? We talked about that last week.
Oh, yeah. Yep, totally. So, that's why that preseason stuff is important for them, but not anybody else. They got to cut it down. They got to cut it down to two or three games. Hopefully wiser heads prevail.
Yeah. I think after this season, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, I think after this season they renegotiate the CBA, the players.
I think it's a little later, right? Because the walkout that either the strike or the lockout or the players walk, they're not talking about that till after the 2020 season.
Is that right? Is it that far?
Yeah. Is it D. Smith, you know, the players union head, has said there's pretty much guaranteed that in the spring of 2021, they'll be on strike or they'll be locked out. It's just kind of guaranteed. They're already just throwing in the towel that there's going to be a problem because the players feel like they've given up way too much to the owners and received very little in return. Monetarily, there's money floating around out there that the owners keep getting and the players think they deserve a part of it. And they've given up things, you know, what the players have received are things like, oh, you only have to have 10 practice you know, sessions in pads during the season or some crazy number. And they cut back a month on the preseason stuff that they've got to show up for. So there's some things that the players got that the old guys wanted because they're tired of that, you know, getting hit in practice. But the owners didn't really give up too much money on that side. So we'll see where it goes. But I think it's pushed out a little bit further than that.
Interesting. Well, hey, let's hit on one thing really quick before we go to Todd's soccer update. Kind of a big trade in the NBA this week.
Ooh, kind of?
Kind of, yeah. Kind of a big trade. So Kyrie Irving gets his request, gets traded from the Cavs. They send him almost as a straight-up swap. It wasn't, but they send him to the Celtics for Isaiah Thomas, along with Jay Crowder and a pick. What were your initial thoughts on how that all worked out? Let's start with you, Bill, and then we'll go to Todd, and then Todd can take this and segue right into soccer.
Well, the I guess for me, it's the recent development on that today or yesterday about Isaiah Thomas's health, right? Because he's always troubled. Yeah, so the Cavs are making noise like, hey, we need to reassess this. We might need
more. We need more, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of weird. But I think, you know, I don't know how much – first of all, it seems weird that the best team in the conference would trade one of their top three players to the second best team in the conference. Mm-hmm. Right? But obviously the Cavs think that that's not
going to – their one beats your two twos, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're not even worried about it. And to be quite honest, as long as LeBron's around. And I don't know if Gilbert's trying to somehow – he's got to be thinking that LeBron's gone after next year.
I think so.
So that pick is huge because that pick could be a lottery pick, could be a number one even if Brooklyn plays as bad as they think people will play. So I think you could definitely see this from the Cavs' point of view. And you can see, then you look as you're for a Celtics fan, you're like, you love getting Kyrie Irving in. The guy hit the biggest shot in the history of the Cavaliers probably to cement that.
Right.
So I think it's huge for both teams. But at the same time, it just feels kind of weird to see, you know, two rivals doing that.
You know, it's funny, Bill, as you say that the two biggest shots in Cleveland history were now taken by players that don't play for the Cavs. Kyrie Irving and Michael Jordan beating Craig Elo in that finals that got him to the, got the Bulls to the finals.
Right. Interesting. You
know, that goes in Cleveland history. So it's interesting. I do think the there's obviously clearly a lot of stuff that's not talked about in the media about the physicals that happen after the trade happens to see, you know, is the product they're getting what they thought it was. So be interesting. Todd, what were your thoughts on that trade?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. From what I understood, you know, we just talked football and Brock Osweiler and you asking, would you want to take less money to be, you know, starting QB? And I don't think this is a money issue with a trade in the NBA, but from what I have been reading, or maybe I assumed, it was Kyrie not being happy with not being the alpha dog and maybe being in the shadow of LeBron. I guess he won a championship with him and wants to try to lead his own team. So that's the first thing that really comes to mind is unless LeBron ran him out, I don't know, you'd know better than I would, Sean, but I guess I assume that Kyrie didn't want to be, you know, 1A. He wanted to be number one on a team. Yeah. So
once again, guys,
that's it. Only time will tell.
I will give Adam Silver credit because once again, the NBA finds a way to get into the headlines just 2 weeks before the NBA. He's doing a good job of making sure it's a year-round sport. Right or wrong, it's good. Speaking of alpha dogs, Todd, why don't you talk to us about Arsenal and Manchester United in the EPL?
Sure. I would love to talk about both. So EPL 3 weeks in. Atop of the pool is Manchester United, atop of the table, I'm sorry. They have three wins. They're the only team with all three wins, and they have 9 points. So I guess, you know, as we know, 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw, and 0 points for a loss. I think I brought it up last week. Jose Mourinho, their skipper, their coach, their guy, every league he's ever coached in, he's won the league in his second year. And this is, of course, his second year. So it seems to be falling to form, but we're only three games in of a 36-game season. Liverpool and Arsenal played today, Sean, in Anfield Stadium there in Liverpool. And Arsenal seems to be in trouble. Again, it's early, but they find themselves 16th out of 20 in the table. They lost 4-0 to Liverpool. Is number two. Yeah. So they have 3 points. They have a win and two losses, but they're 16th. So Liverpool is second, tied for second, with Huddersfield Town, a promoted team, Manchester City and West Brom Albion. So EPL is up and running. It's exciting. Again, when you're waiting for football to come on, you can catch some early games on a Saturday morning. They also usually have a Monday afternoon game, a Sunday morning game, and sometimes midweek. So it's, as you know, I'm a fan.
Well, let's finish up episode 72. Let's do a little transition into college football. Todd, I'm going to ask you to get your laptop fired up, pull up the top 20. We'll kind of go in reverse order of college football and do a little preseason picks. Next week's episode, which will be the week after the kind of the official kickoff, the three of us will kind of go through and pick our big five conference winners. We'll pick our CFP contestants, and we'll pick our Heisman winner next week. We did have a couple games kick off yesterday. I don't know if you guys caught the Stanford game. Stanford played against Rice in Sydney, Australia. A big win for Stanford. A couple other games happened yesterday. Todd, you got your games pulled up, and we'll just maybe go, why don't we do this? Why don't we just let Bill pick each game first, because Bill's the reigning champion of our stare down picks. Let's go in reverse order from number top 25 games down, and Todd, we'll sort of, you set up the games and we'll each pick.
I have them listed, if you don't mind. I'm listing per days, Thursday games, Friday games,
okay,
Saturday
let's do
games.
That.
You mind doing that?
So. Sure.
Are you keeping
track? Right, so Thursday.
Or are we just having fun with this?
No, we're just having fun, yeah.
Okay, good.
So Thursday, Sean and Bill, Oklahoma State plays Tulsa in Oklahoma State, and they are an 18-point favorite. So I think that would be a pretty easy one to pick, right?
Yeah, I'll lay the 18.
Yeah. I think Oklahoma State's going to come out strong. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's – time will tell. Does he still have that great mullet haircut, their skipper?
I think so. We'll have to see if he does. He's
unbelievable. He's 40. I'm a man. Yeah, that was, what, 12, 13 years ago? God, time flies. So also on Thursday, we have Ohio State, Indiana. You guys want to guess the spread on that one?
I'm just going to guess it's about a 24.
A 32.
20 and a half.
Oh, I was way off.
So
yeah, Ohio State, obviously, there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'll take Ohio State to win, but I'll take the points. I think Indiana keeps it close. Home field, first game. Although it's interesting because Kevin Smith, the offensive coordinator now for Ohio State, came from Indiana, was fired as the Indiana head coach, and is now the Buckeye head coach. Be interesting to see if he really opens up the playbook and just trounces his team, because they're going back to Bloomington. So he's back in the city that fired him. So I think it'll be could be one of those rusty games, but Buckeyes have come out strong and made a statement before. So I like the Buckeyes to win. Todd?
I think Buckeyes win. I think it's close, but I think they pull away and easily cover would be my guess. But it'll be closer than they want at halftime.
Okay.
Would be my guess. So let's go to Friday. Washington at Rutgers. We can play guess the spread, or we could move on to that one. It's a big one. It's 30 and a half.
Yeah.
It's a beat down.
Huge fan of UW.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, they're going to do big things in the Pac-12, like win it. So
is it Jacob Browning?
Josh Browning. Yeah.
Josh Browning. He's going to be good. I think he throws all over the park, and then they get him out in the third quarter.
Yeah.
Big win for UW.
Who's their coach? Well, I'm drawing a blank.
Gary Peterson, right?
Yeah, from – wow. Okay.
Yeah, all that's. I think that's where he came from.
No, isn't Gary Peterson in that TCU?
Gary Patterson is the coach at
TCU. TCU.
Mm-hmm. Peterson.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Chris Peterson.
There you go. All right. Cool. And then we round out Friday with Wisconsin hosting Utah State. Does anyone want to guess on a point spread before they pick, or you can go with your pick?
That's got to be a 41 and a half.
Yeah, Wisconsin.
It's only 28.
Only four touchdowns.
Yeah.
I'll take the Badgers.
Yeah, only 28.
So far, we're all on the favorites.
Yeah, Sean, what's the talk up there? Wisconsin's supposed to be pretty good this year?
I think
they're ranked ninth. So.
Big Ten's pretty high on themselves. They got four in the top 10, and Michigan just outside the top 10. I think they're going to be strong. And I think they're just going to be typical Wisconsin, boring football, plotted out, big fat guys running the football. So I'll take a 38-7 victory for the Badgers.
One of my favorite Kirk Herbstreit euphemisms of all time when he said the Wisconsin offensive linemen looked like they had fat ankles. And I guess he was making reference to they weren't fleet of foot or very agile, but fat ankles. I thought that was pretty good. So nice. Anyway.
Awesome.
All right. Let's move on to Saturday. Sean, our big one. The number 11 Michigan Wolverines are playing our number 17 Florida Gators in Dallas. I believe we have some of our former classmates, current fraternity brothers going. So I'll lead with you. What do you say?
Well, I'm excited about this game because I just want to see how we do. I'm a little disappointed we haven't really solidified a quarterback. We have three guys between Luke Del Rio, Felipe Franks, the incoming redshirt freshman, and Malik Zaire, the Notre Dame transfer who sat out for a year, who all three have been talked about in preseason. Once again, I kind of fall in that camp. If you don't have one quarterback, you don't have any quarterbacks. Wilson Spate, the Michigan quarterback, is pretty solid.
Are all three slated to play?
I think all three are slated to get some playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
In some form or fashion, because they can. I believe, Todd, maybe you're closer to the action. You and Bill are both closer, that Antonio Callaway is going to be sitting on this one, which means that the receiving core is really opened up. I think that puts a lot of pressure on Jordan Scarlett. I know this is a long breakdown of a game. I haven't seen anything from the teams, but I do like Florida to win in a close one, probably like a 21-17 type game, because I think our defense is going to come to play.
Todd?
Okay, yeah. So, Sean, Michigan is favored by 3.5. I agree with a lot of what you say about the outcome of the game. Our defense, I think, steps up, but I think this is me speaking, right? Felipe Franks is going to get the nod to start. I think last year he has all the skills, but it was a playbook, just a green issue as far as running the team. I think the transfer from Notre Dame probably has great skills, but again, he's stepping in. Does he know the playbook? Does he know the plays? I think Luke Del Rio, unfortunately for him, played injured last year a lot, and I think that contributed to a lot of his failure. And I think McElwain feels pretty bad about that because I think he kind of put him in that position. But that says, I think they hand the keys over to Felipe Franks, and I think for at least a year or two until our friend from California comes on campus, it'll be his team. So looking forward to it. I'm thinking more of a probably similar, a 24-21 type of game.
Okay.
Bill?
You're playing the Gators, right, Todd?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Sorry.
I got to go contrarian just to have some fun with this, I think. Because if we all just pick the Gators, it looks like Bill's succumbing too easily to the Gatorade that is all over me from this stare down. I think that, I don't know, Harbaugh's going to find a way to pull this off. I know he lost a lot of really good players last year, and so that's the big question mark. Like, I don't think they're winning. They're not going to win the Big Ten, right? I'm not going to say that. But I think they beat Florida in a close game. I'll just take that same score, reverse it for Michigan. There you go.
24-21. Okay,
yep.
Good. That would be right around the spread, which those guys in Vegas seem to know. What are the big games we got, Todd? Let's roll through these.
Yes, let's roll through them. A lot of these probably shouldn't take up much of our time. But this one's actually interesting. So Appalachian State comes into Stanford Stadium, UGA, right? The Bulldogs. I'd like you guys to take a guess on the point spread on that one.
13.5.
Did you know that, Sean?
I did not. No, is that right?
You nailed it. Yeah, you absolutely nailed it. So I think that's a little low, but I think Georgia's poised to have a great year. But as you just said, these guys who set the lines tend to know things. I would – if I was betting on that game, I'd lay heavy on Georgia. I think they're poised to have a great year. And no, Appalachian State doesn't sneak into any house anymore. I mean, people know how good they and threatening they can potentially be. So
yeah.
that surprised me a little bit.
I like Jacob Eason. I like Sony Michel healthy. I like for Georgia to, they have to lay the perception, especially if is that game before or after the, is that a night game? Would Florida, could,
it's at 6:15 at night.
So it's possible that Florida could be losing or have lost. And I think Georgia will do everything they can to show the world that they are here to compete with Alabama. So I like Georgia big in that game.
Me too. Yeah.
Me too.
Okay. Next.
Kent State at Clemson. I don't think we need to talk much about that. It's a 38.5-point spread. Yep. Akron, Sean, your boys traveling to Penn State.
Penn State big.
32-point spread, so I think that's pretty easy. Yep. Maryland at Texas.
That's
Sean, Tom Herman's, what do you think?
Tom Herman's first game. Tom Herman's going to do everything he can to get that Texas alum behind him right away. They're going to throw the ball all over the field, be very vertical in their offense, and I like Texas to win by at least 25 in that game. Maryland's horrible.
Bill, horrible. Texas all the way.
Yeah, I think it's – I agree with both of you. Bethune-Cookman at Miami. Miami wins that one.
Yep.
UTEP at Oklahoma. Any doubt in a 44.5-point spread?
Nope.
Do they cover or no? That's the only question, right?
I think they easily cover, but I think they get Baker Mayfield out of the game early in the third quarter, and they still run up another 21 points after he leaves the game.
I like it.
Stony Brook. Oh, this is a big one. Sorry, Bill. Anything to add to that or no?
Nope.
This is a big one for you, Bill. Stony Brook at USF. 4:00.
Oof.
I think.
Yeah, we saw what happened to San Jose State this week. no, that's an easy SF win. And I'm even going to be at that game. So that'll be fun. I get home in time, I think, from New York. But
nice.
Real quick, just to talk about how that went down yesterday. Did you get a chance, either one of you, to watch any of that game?
I didn't, know.
Just the complete, you know, that team that is completely outclassed and outmatched athletically but has that amazing first quarter? You two, much as you like college football, have seen this probably 500 times in your life. It was a classic example of being down 16 zip at the end of the first quarter and then going into halftime up 28-16 and end up winning, 42-22. So SF,
wow.
Quentin Flowers just had a really rough start, got sacked, couldn't make anything, get anything happening. And then by the end of the game, he'd come back and they took care of business. So yeah, SF, 19th ranked. We'll see if they can make it fun in Florida for three teams, right?
Nice. Yeah. Four teams. You can
nice.
Yeah. You're right.
So
we don't count.
Western Michigan at USC. It's a little doubt there. It's a 27.5-point spread.
Darnold, it's a big game in that one. 350 yards at least.
Yeah.
A couple TDs.
Starts his Heisman campaign as well as his number one draft pick campaign.
I agree. 100%. This guy's going to be the favorite to beat. I think JT Barrett and Baker Mayfield can both step up in that game in Columbus on September 9th. But I think Darnold is going to be the pretty boy and get the West Coast bias.
Kind of like an Andrew Luck feel, right? From
very much so. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah.
Louisville at Purdue.
Louisville,
25-point spread for Louisville.
Lamar Jackson comes out big.
Yeah. Louisville as well there. So
that's going to be.
We're different on one game, is what you're trying to say.
We got a couple big ones coming up. Now we have Georgia Southern, Auburn.
Auburn.
Gosh, Sean, we need to be truthful though. They came into the swamp and beat us in the Will Muschamp era, right?
They did.
But no way, yeah. Auburn rolls their 35-point spread. I call on a guy who's an Auburn alum, and he is predicting an undefeated national championship season for Auburn, which is a bold prediction, but he seems to be pretty confident. We'll have to keep an eye out on the War Eagles.
I'll say it. They are the kind of – we'll talk next week on our preview show. The kid coming out of Baylor as quarterback, getting a lot of love there on the Plains.
Yeah.
If they can get past game, big game in week two at Clemson, can the defending champions – with a new quarterback, beat the one of the hot quarterbacks and the hot stories in Auburn. Auburn wins that game, and I think they cruise through the West until they get that last game of the year against Auburn, which won't hurt us, Todd, if they can beat Georgia for us. So,
no, absolutely not. We got two more good games and two great ones. Bill, did you see DJ just hit a big putt, apparently, just now while we're talking?
Massive.
I think he
– massive par-saving putt. And now Jordan has to match.
Yes. Yeah, and it was a bomb.
They're going to go to the playoff. Let's just jump in here really quick. DJ hit a shot up in the right rough on 18 at this old Glen Oaks. And he had to punch out into the fairway. Hit a crappy shot to about 30 feet and made that putt to save par. Jordan had about a 50 footer for birdie and he just two putted for par. So they're moving on to extra holes in New York. Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a bomb, DJ. Multitasking here on the stare down.
Jordan made a similar putt to save par on 17. So it's been a great little fun to watch. Go ahead.
Okay, here we go. BYU at LSU.
Phew, man, I watched BYU. Mm-hmm. I watched BYU yesterday. Really plod through Portland State. The announcers were really trying to give Portland State credit for being a solid team. I just can't see Orgeron and the Tigers not coming out fired up to win that game. I like LSU on that one.
I'll take LSU as well, especially at home.
Yeah. Yep. 13-point favorite. I think they take care of business. All right. Getting better. West Virginia at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is a 5-point favorite.
And Todd, correct me if I'm wrong, but the quarterback for Virginia, for West Virginia, is going to be Will Greer.
It's going to be doesn't he have to wait 6 games?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Greer.
Even though he sat out the whole year? I thought
he had to come in midway through, or maybe that was last year.
Right. Wow. That's a good point.
So Bill, I don't know if you know, but Will Greer was Florida's, he was on track to be as good as any of them, right? As good as, the greats. And, he failed a drug test 6 weeks in, McElwain suspended him. And then, we were 6-0. He looked all world. I mean, again, he looked like he was going to be as good as any Florida quarterback. And, he was eventually released from his scholarship and transferred to West Virginia. Sean, I need to check on that. I don't know.
I think he's been out for a year because he would have been able to play last year, the week before the Georgia game, but he was already gone. So very interesting. But so that game's at Virginia Tech, right?
That game is correct at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech ranked 21st.
Huge rivalry game.
Yeah.
What's the guy's name?
Will Greer eligible for West Virginia season opener. So, yes, he's eligible.
And Dana Horgerson is probably playing for his career this year. I tell you what, that's Lane Stadium, such a tough place to play. I'll go – what's the line in that game?
5. Virginia Tech, giving 5.
I'll take Virginia Tech, but I'll give the points.
And I'll go Hokies as well.
I'm going with West Virginia on the minor upset.
Wow.
I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I need to research, is he starting? I know he's eligible to play, but is he the starter?
That's a good question.
I don't know if you know.
You should probably know that before you pick him.
It's just a good feel.
No, you're acting like Todd's a gambler.
Sorry. Exactly.
God, how dare you both. I'm just kidding. So, all right, here we go. So – Saturday night, 8:00, prime time, Herb Street, Fowler, Florida State, Alabama, at the brand new Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia. Alabama is a 7-point favorite. Sean, what say you?
All right. Deondre Francois, the quarterback, sophomore quarterback for Florida State, getting a lot of run. Very mobile quarterback. A lot of people comparing him to the kid from Clemson last year. Derwin James, they're all everything defender. People are even saying he's going to be the Heisman favorite, which I just think is blasphemy. No defender is going to be the Heisman favorite at all. They might make it to New York on hype, but I see Alabama. I see Nick Saban saying, look, we owned the Georgia Dome. We need to go in on day one and put a sign up that says ownership, deed of occupancy on the Mercedes-Benz Dome. I think Alabama wins that game. Jalen Hurts, I think, is a better sophomore quarterback than DeAndre Francois. And I think Bo Scarborough puts his name very, very front and center in the foreheads of most of America, realizing that this guy is the next great running back at Alabama. I like Alabama by at least 10.
Are you worried about Alabama's defense at all, right? Because they lost a ton of players.
They did.
So, but you just figure Saban's the guy who's going to –
I think between Jalen Hurts as with that extra extra game last year, not really an extra game because everybody had an extra game. I think with Scarborough and Hurts, they just pound the clock. I just think they dominate. To finish drives with touchdowns will be critical in this game. Not giving up field goals or you know stopping field goals for Florida State. I like Florida State or I like Alabama probably. 28-17.
18? Yeah.
I'll take Alabama as well, but in a slightly closer game. So
okay.
Yeah.
And why do you say that, Bill? Why do you think it's gonna be closer? Do you think Florida State's gonna be that much better? Or do you think the defense on Alabama will give up points?
I think that's what's gonna happen. I think that Alabama doesn't have that same the defense they had last year, they don't have this year. And so I think that a Florida State team who's bringing back a ton of great players, right? I think the way that works out, they're in good shape. I think they're going to be competitive with them, but I don't think they're going to win. Not in the Georgia Dome or the Mercedes-Benz.
Thank you. Yes.
Sorry.
That leaves me. So, gosh, how do you pick against Alabama, right? That's always my struggle. I believe I did that in the national championship game. Not trying to Bill won the pool, but I think I won the big one. So yeah, it goes against all my better judgment. How can you ever pick against Alabama? That said, I think Florida State needs this game a little more than Alabama. If you look at their schedule, it's pretty soft ACC schedule. You got Miami is currently ranked 18th. Down the end of the season, you have Clemson and then Florida. Whereas I think Alabama, even with a loss, can survive and still make, the Final Four. Just another gut feel. I don't know if it's because I'm going to be at St. George Island, which is very near Tallahassee, but I'm going with Florida State to win by a field goal.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
We'll see, right?
Well, one more. Go ahead, Dad.
Yeah, we'll finish it. Labor Day, we got a bonus game. We have Tennessee, Georgia Tech. I think it's at Georgia Tech unless they're playing a neutral field. No, this is also being played in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
It is, yeah.
Tennessee giving 4. What say you, Bill?
Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I like Georgia Tech as well. I think this begins the Butch Jones farewell tour. They are champions of life, but they're going to be fourth place in the SEC East.
God, as much as I want to agree with you boys, I never am sad to see Tennessee lose. I think they're playing an option team, and if this was week 3, I would pick Georgia Tech to win all day. This is week 1. They've had all summer to prepare for the triple option. So I think they have the athletes that are disciplined enough to play good defense. So I'm going to pick Tennessee to win that one.
All right. Good.
It's really different a couple of games, right? So yeah.
The only a couple. But we'll get 2 games quicker next week because we'll just probably pick a couple and then we'll pick the NFL as well. But good conversation tonight, guys. Let's wrap up as we always do with a quick look at our week. Todd, what do you got coming up this week ahead to finish out the week of August or the month of August?
All right, Sean. So obviously very much looking forward to the Labor Day weekend, and we talked before, in order to do that, we need to make sure that all our business ducks are in a row. So I have some finish up work to do, believe it or not, with the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's open, it's running, but there's still some behind the scenes punch list items that need to be done. So that's going to be a huge focus. Service, it's the least favorite part of my job, going on service calls, but it's an important one. In order to have future sales, you need to make the end user happy. So That'll be the focus of my week, early week, and the end of the week is going to be trying to leave as few loose ends untied. So looking forward to it, Sean. Thanks.
Good. Bill, great episode last week on your podcast with Ms. Monson out of Arizona. Who do you got coming up this week?
This week we go to Chicago, the Windy City, and I get a Coldwell Banker agent named Andrea Geller, who I know you know very well, Sean.
One of my best. Yeah, yeah. She's awesome.
Super smart lady. We actually discuss the trial. We discussed the lawsuit.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, which I wasn't sure we were going to be able to do that. And I was really happy that we could. And we make sure we vetted everything properly. And I think you'll enjoy it. So that's going to come up Tuesday. And then, of course, I am not doing anything else other than enjoying the Empire State as well as the U.S. Open.
Good. Well, we'll listen for you to yell mashed potato or something like that after one of these serves.
What? Give me a phrase you want to hear, and I swear I'll get it in a microphone.
Stare down. Sunday's at 8.
Just listen hard for stare down.
Okay. Stare down podcast. You got it.
You got it. All right.
Well, hey guys, for me, I'm in Montana now. I fly back. I finish up the month, and then I really start hot and heavy into the my September travel schedule. I got a lot of great conferences. We'll talk over the next few weeks about that. I do want to give a shout out to my daughter, Riley. She just pledged Delta Zeta sorority today. Joined the same.
Mom must be thrilled, huh, Sean?
Same sorority as her mom.
And, wow, that's great. Very cool.
A long struggle through sorority rush at University of South Carolina. But shout out to Riley for making it through and joining a house, which I'm sure will make her happy. And Todd and I, you know, 30 plus years later, still consider our BU friends some of our best friends in the world. So guys, it's always good talking to you. So let me just close out the show on behalf of Bill and St. Pete and Todd in Atlanta. I'm Sean in God's country, Big Sky, Montana. Thanks for listening to the Stare Down.